Caroline Greer now joins.
So, welcome everybody, good afternoon. Should we do some introductions?
Hello, okay. This is operator.
Do we have people online, I believe. Do we know who's online?
I will start the recording now.
Who's online?
Okay.
Olga Cavalli. Caroline Greer. Welcome to those of you online. Maybe not.
Thank you.
So we thought we might just start by going around the room and introducing ourselves.
This call will not be recorded. You can start now. Thank you.
That's very kind. Thank you. And perhaps we might start down that end of the table and come back round this way. Ron.
Yes, good afternoon. Ron Sherwood, CCNSO liaison to ALEC.
Rudy Vansnik, liaison CCNSO from ALAC.
Kiro Hotta from .jp, CCNSO member.
Bibuntai Gear from .tz registry.
Paolo Sinenda, .mw, CCNSO council.
Eric Iriarte, LAC TLD, liaison to CCNSO council.
Oscar Robles, CCTLD for Mexico.mx and part of the CCNSO Council.
Liz Gaster, ICANN Policy Staff.
Wendy Seltzer, non-commercial GNSO Counselor.
Rafik Damak, NCSG GNSO Counselor.
Dottie Sparks DeBlanc, CCTLD Council.
Next to us is the wonderful Glenn from the staff of the GNSO, who makes everything happen. And I am Bill Drake, and I am a GNSO counselor from the non-commercial stakeholder group.
Hi, Stefan Van Gelder. I'm a registrar stakeholder group representative to the GNSO Council.
Krista Spang.au and chair of the CCNSO.
Yoamli.kr, vice chair of the CCNSO.
Becky Burr, CCNSO Council.
Lost my neighbour. Good afternoon. Leslie Carey.uk and CCNSO Councillor.
Peter Van Roste, Centre, CCNSO Council.
Mathieu Vey, AFNIC, Telefar Manager, CCNSO Member, and Center Chair now.
André Philippe, .cz, and CCNSO Council.
Byron Holland, .ca, Vice Chair, CCNSO.
Rolf Ulrich Knoben, GNSO Councillor from the ISPs.
Good afternoon, Tony Tan from GIC.
Sorry.
Yes, I asked for Coca-Cola.
Good afternoon. My name is Deborah Hughes. I am with the American Red Cross and part of the GNSO NCSG.
So, hello everyone. It's always a pleasure to meet with the CCNSO. Chris and I thought we might just start by explaining why Chuck's not speaking to you, and I am, and then just going over quickly the current GNSO structure, which has changed recently, as you all no doubt know, but we thought it might be useful to just remind you what the new structure looks like. So first of all, for reasons that have been much debated in the last few days, certain members of the GNSO community were unable to make it to this meeting. Chuck is one of them, the chair of the GNSO Council. I am the vice chair, one of the two vice chairs, the other being Olga Cavalli, and as such I'm standing in for Chuck for this meeting. Olga is also, for personal reasons, was also unable to make it to this meeting. I know she's very sorry about that. So just to go over the new bicameral structure for the council, there is now a twin house structure. On the one hand, we have the non-contracted party's house, which includes, and I hope I'm not going to get this wrong, because I'm actually the only representative of the contracted party's house that's in Nairobi. So I've been laboring under this minority position for the past 2 days, and I can get pretty horrible looks from my counterparts in the non-contracted parties house. So anyway, there's the NCSG, the non-commercial stakeholder group, and then there are some constituencies in that house, the IPC, intellectual property constituency, the business constituency, and the ISP, internet service providers constituency. And I believe we have representatives of all those groups in the room. I'm looking around. I don't know. Zahid's not here, so the BC's not represented. Zahid's actually still in that EOI panel, I think. That's the non-contracted party's side of the house. Welcome, Andre. Another GNSO councillor, trying to even up the numbers a little bit. And on the contracted side, we have two groups, the registries and the registrars. So that's the basic makeup. I'm happy to answer any further questions you may have. I don't want to labour the new GNSO structure anymore. So perhaps we can open up for discussion. Yeah. So we prepared two subjects for today. One of them I'm hopelessly unqualified to discuss with you, because we were counting on Edmund Chung, which is Edmund Chung is working with some of you on the JIG, and we were planning to discuss that. Now I know Andre, I'm looking around because I just saw him come in, but now he's disappeared again. I know oh, there you are. He's qualified to discuss it, so maybe we can still have that discussion. It's up to you. And we also wanted to discuss the affirmation of commitments. We can start with that, and I suggest we can discuss any other things as well that we may want to talk about. Does someone from the council want to lead that discussion? The GNSO Council, sorry.
Perhaps the question is, what would the GNSO like to address with us on the affirmation commitment?
We hadn't set specific questions. We wanted to have an open discussion with you on what the AOC means for you and what it means for us, just to find out if we have common ground, if we have the same views, if we have diverging views, if we have the same level of understanding of what it means. So it's an open discussion. No set questions there.
Perhaps let me start by saying, giving my own personal view, which is that actually the affirmation of commitment itself is not desperately... I mean, it's there. It exists. It's not a negotiating document. It's not open for drafting changes. So it is what it is. What flows from that, however, apart from amorphous things like, you know, changes in behaviour and so on, which may or may not occur, what flows from that are now a whole series of reviews. And I think perhaps that might be quite an interesting area for discussion.
I know that the call for volunteers, if you will, closed yesterday, and I believe that the list is now going to be considered. I don't know if you're aware. I mentioned it to some of my council yesterday, and I had actually forgotten to send them a copy of this. But the chairs of the GNSO Council, the ALAC, and the CCNSO wrote to Rod and Peter and Yanis, expressing our concerns about several facts. One of which was that the process that each of our supporting organisations or advisory committees actually have processes in place by which we choose people to do stuff. And this particular process that was just put in place on an ad hoc basis effectively forced us into a situation where we had to go outside of our own well-worn and well-honed processes in order to provide them with a series of volunteers. There were several other points made about timing, or the usual ones about timing, etc., and also the irony of the fact that the first review is on accountability and transparency, and the process is neither accountable nor transparent. Just so that you know where we are on this, I know that you guys have put forward a number of volunteers. We had no process whatsoever for arranging for volunteers. All we did was simply tell everybody that they might like to volunteer, and then once we knew who they were, we would presumably be asked whether we endorsed them or not. And as of yesterday, we actually had precisely zero volunteers. Yes, but as of the close of business yesterday, we have one. So it's a pretty fair bet that our one person will be the person who represents the CCNSO. Now, we actually have to, I guess we have to go through a process at our council meeting on Wednesday, formally endorsing that volunteer. But assuming that that's not an issue, then... I'm very uncomfortable about this whole thing. I think it's really not good at all.
Yeah, I think we share a lot of your concerns. Speaking purely from a registrar point of view, it's been tough for us to even, within the timeline, to even get any process forward where we can approve or start to even consider some of the volunteers. Now, I believe Bill's going to speak to this because he's our point man on this, but I believe we have 10 volunteers from the... Is that correct? From the GNSO. And the problem for us then is to go back to our stakeholder groups and constituencies and try and, within that short time frame, get a process together where we can approve them. So that really is proving a challenge. I think we're finding the same problems that you've just outlined.
And you presumably would have to go through a process of endorsing a number of them, but the problem is, of course, you don't know how many you need. And so, therefore, you could end up spending an awful lot of time fighting over, say, endorsing 5 people, only to discover that, in fact, you only needed 1 or 2, because we don't know the numbers. And I'm told the current situation is that there is still no answer to that question. There are some who think it should be a small group of about 8 in total, not 8 GNSO, 8 in total, and others who believe that it should be about 12 or 13, and no decision has yet been made.
Bill, do you want to speak to this?
Sure. Bill Drake. So I was am the chair of the drafting team that put together the GNSO process for managing all the selections and nominations. I'm also on what we've called an evaluation team, which will be looking at the pool of candidates that are open to competitive election and providing an assessment of them to the council prior to its vote on those positions. Let me just lay out briefly the topography. By the way, I just want to say one thing, Chris. The one candidate you have, one of the ambiguities actually in the documents that, as I read them, it's not entirely obvious to me whether the selectors are bound to accept
that the names we put forward?
Yes, you are correct. It is not entirely obvious that they are bound to select a representative from, right. from the CCNSO. However, you can pretty much rest assured that if they don't...
it would be politically unwise.
It would not be a wise thing to do.
It would be politically unwise, but technically, if they said, looking at the total global mix that we're trying to get, we need a different kind of body. Hey, can't you guys give us somebody else?
Oh, they can do that. Of course they could do that, yes. But then that makes a mockery of the whole process, doesn't it? Mm.
Well, I'm sure that the challenge that Peter and Yanis will have is trying to get an overall balanced slate that they think that the international community won't go, oh, my God, how did you settle on that? So they're going to try to get some measure of diversity and distribution across stakeholder groups and interests and all the
I think that's true, but I think that's true, but I would argue that by... I would argue that by launching a process that has in it effectively a requirement for each candidate to be endorsed by mm-hmm. SO or AC, there's a fairly heavy implication in there that you'll expect that to be spread across.
I agree. Only taking note of what are the many delicious ambiguities that we've labored under. The process for the GNSO of defining a mechanism was, of course, complicated by the fact that the timelines kept changing. The dates by which we had to do things were up in the air for a long time and then went back and forth. And so we had to recalibrate continuously until we were finally able to settle on something. But here's the bottom line. If you're interested, I'll make it very brief. We set up a process whereby we could put forward up to six names. Each of our four stakeholder groups gets allocated one fixed person whose name will go into the pool from the GNSO. Then we have two other slots, one of which is reserved for people who are unaffiliated with any stakeholder group. Independents could be... law professors or something like that who know a lot about ICANN but don't work within the different bodies, or some other kind of expert on accountability and transparency, something like that, or somebody who simply says, I don't identify with any of these stakeholder groups. So there's that category. And then there's another category, which is a kind of competitive category, for which each of the stakeholder groups can nominate up to two people. So we're looking at we have a pool of 10 right now. Four of those will be allocated to the stakeholder groups. Six then will be up for contention in the two competitive slots. Those slots will be selected on the basis of majority of both houses. If nobody gets a majority of both houses, we'll try to give it a second go, and if we can't get anything, then I guess we'll just have to live with having reached no consensus on that. We are also trying hard to do whatever we can to get gender and geographical diversity, and we put some requirements into our process to that end. Of course, the limitation there is the nature of the pool that you get in the first place. As it happens, of the 10 applicants we received, only one is a woman. So it makes our gender diversity goal a little bit hard to fully operationalize. We do, however, have some internationality in our mix among some of the stakeholder groups nominees. On the other hand, other stakeholder groups have basically just nominated white guys from the United States, so which makes it a little harder. So we have to figure out how to balance all those things out. And so what we will do is on Constituency Day, hopefully or soon thereafter, the stakeholder groups will sort out their preferences and notify the GNSO. The evaluation team will take up the remaining issues, and we will have a vote in the council on, I believe, the 16th or so. And hopefully we have six names at the end of that.
Leslie, did you want... Thanks very much, Paul. Leslie?
Yeah, thank you. I'd echo Chris's comments. This selection of the reviewers seems very late and rushed and doesn't seem to take account of the processes within the community for doing that in a more considered, timely fashion. And there is an element of hindsight with those comments. Learning from that, I'm looking forward to the reviewers coming up with a draft report. And notice in the consultation there's talk about a draft report appearing in October of this year, and the final report miraculously being produced in December of this year. And having a bit of foresight, I would say, does that actually allow for the normal consideration processes that we might have within the community in order to reflect on the report recommendations? Because maybe we could focus some attention on actually getting that stage of this process much better and allowing due community consideration on the report in a more considered and timely fashion.
Can I just check I understood what you said? You're saying that you think that the once we've got the review team, that the process for coming up with a final report is too short because it doesn't seem to allow for the usual community discussions and input on
this,
the report.
This is feeling rushed, doesn't allow for our normal processes.
Yeah.
I happily predict the end of this process will be the same unless we proactively make it otherwise.
That's right. Yeah, I was going to congratulate you on managing to use both hindsight and foresight in the same sentence. So, yes, I mean, I agree with that. I think there is a danger of this whole thing being squashed into a very small box and yeah.
Are any of the people online, do any of them want to comment? We don't have, just to let those people know, we don't have the Adobe screen up, so actually if you put your hand up, we won't see it. So you might want to speak up if you do.
Yeah, Bart's got it open on his computer, okay. But we don't have it open here.
Right.
I don't think there's anyone coming in online.
No.
Okay. Just to let you know what unless Cheryl and or Chuck have received a reply and accidentally my name was left off the envelope, then we haven't received a reply. And one of the first things that we invariably do on our first day, Tuesday meeting is have a meeting with the chair and the CEO. And this is one of the items that is on the discussion agenda for that meeting to find out what the situation is. Because one of the other concerns that we expressed in the letter, if I remember correctly, was that it seems to be that this pool of people is supposed to be the pool of people for all of the reviews, which is complete nonsense. This pool of people is the pool of people for all of the reviews. It's not? It is just for this one? Okay. Well, maybe I misunderstood then.
Yeah, you touch on one of the challenges that we have once again, specifically for this meeting, which is we normally also meet with at least Peter and... but you... Okay, well, we'll get to Chuck in just 5 seconds. We normally meet with Peter, Rod, and senior ICANN staff during our constituency days, and that's going to be a challenge because most of our constituents here for this meeting aren't physically present in the room, so that will once again add complexities there, and one of those, touching on those subjects is going to be difficult when people aren't actually physically here and able to participate as much as they could or as they might have been if they were here. Although, one has to say that we found, because as you know, the GNSO Council meets on the Saturday and the Sunday before each ICANN meetings, we've had nothing but good experiences with the remote participation so far, and I'm sure Chuck will be able to confirm that now, seeing he's on the line. Chuck.
Yes, thank you. Sorry, I was a little late. The EOI session was going way over, and so I had to switch rooms here in Reston. With regard to which review teams this is for, I fully understand that the request for applicants was for all review teams, and in fact, some of the requests that have requested GNSO endorsement have been for more than just the first review. But I wanted to clarify that the GNSO, just for our purposes, is only focusing on the first review team right now, the one on accountability and transparency, because we did not want to have such a rushed process as was required for this one to apply to the other review teams. So our focus in the GNSO, and I'm just speaking for the GNSO right now, and Bill knows this well, is really right now on the accountability and transparency review team. And our plans are to do a more thorough job of developing a process for endorsement of candidates for the other review teams. Thank you.
Thank you, Chuck.
Yes, and just further to Chuck's point, the process that we set for this one was somewhat seat of the pants, and we recognized it is essentially a one-time model. We're going to test it, see what lessons we learned from it. We're going to revise and establish in April, or hopefully May at the latest, a permanent model for how we're going to handle successive rounds of review teams going forward. There will be the ICANN's call for applicants was a little bit ambiguous, I think, and probably led to some confusion. Some people did apply and say, I'm not really interested in this particular review team. I'm interested in a future one. And in those cases, we had to sort of put those aside and say, okay, we'll look at this person later. But since very few people actually applied for the subsequent ones, logically, we're going to have to come back again and do another call at a more appropriate time after there's been some experience, and hopefully more people will have, by that point, get clustered together and identified, okay, we want to work on security and stability, and we'll have a proper call for that, and then do the competition, then do the quiz. So I think that there was a little bit of messiness with the first round, but there will be successive rounds.
Thank you. I understand that, but that is based on your understanding that you would have the opportunity. That there would be an opportunity for a call for volunteers for the next review. And my reading of it was that this was the call for volunteers, full stop. And that this is now the pool. And when the next review kicks off, people are taken from that pool. Now, Chuck, was that your understanding as well?
Well, yes, Chris. I did understand the request for volunteers to be for all of them. Okay, we just decided in the GNSO that we're not going to look for volunteers for the other review teams, and even if they're submitted now, until we develop a more comprehensive process in that regard.
Thank you, Chuck, and I agree with that. And what I suppose I'm saying is that we need to make sure that the GNSO, the CCNSO, the ALAC actually make it abundantly clear that as far as we're concerned, this is it for this one, and it does not mean that you will simply be able to carry on. You will have to do another one, otherwise we will just not accept that. Yeah.
Now, Chris, if I can respond to that, I think we should talk a little bit more, and we don't necessarily have to do that right now. We should talk a little bit more about how long the application process is for the other review teams, because, and I'm speaking for myself now because we haven't really talked about this extensively in the broader GNSO community, but I personally would not be opposed if there were subsequent requests or volunteers for the reviews that are going to happen later. In fact, I actually think that would be better to get it out of this rushed process that is so flawed right now.
Yeah, I agree. I think there was Oscar. Did you want to say something? Okay.
No, please speak now if you want to. I mean, you know, apart from saying that we fully agree with what Chuck has just said, there's not much else to say, so go ahead.
I haven't understood yet if there's going to be a call for the other reviews, and well, my comment is that there should be different groups because they require different set of skills for the reviewing of these other issues.
And I think, thanks, Oscar, and I think that that is, I think what we're getting to here is understanding that that is the message we will all be delivering and by whatever methodology we choose to ICANN. Are there any other comments on this particular bit?
So shall we move on to the nice technical subject?
At we had point, both you and I should probably leave.
Yeah, we can probably go and have a cup of coffee. The point that we'd written down, this was working with Edmund, was asking the question of what will be requested and publicly displayed in the IANA Who Is for IDN TLDs. And having said that, I'm still trying to understand the question. So, Andre, do you want to
Andre, just before you do, I just need to set the background, I think, so that we know the context in which we're talking. The CCNSO and the GNSO agreed some time ago that we thought it would be a nice idea to set up a joint working group to look at any issues on IDNs that were sort of crossover issues. It took us quite a while to get that sorted out, and in fact that working group does exist. It's co-chaired by Edmund and by Jian, neither of whom are with us today. And there has been a little bit of discussion with amongst the chairs about what are the crossover issues and what is relevant. And Edmund had suggested that the information to be put into WHOIS was a crossover issue, and my response to that was, well, no, it isn't actually, because every one of our CCTLDs has their own WHOIS, and we have our own rules and regulations and so on. So that was quite an interesting topic. So, Andre, that's over to you now.
Thank you very much. There are a few things, actually, significant things that happened since the last ICANN meeting. The JIG work group has been formed, but it's been kind of slow for a simple reason, because the center of the discussion has moved to the international registration data. And Edmund, fortunately, he's not online. He's spending most of his time and his knowledge about the international data and who is in the international data registration group, basically, which is really actively working and delivering results. There have been a few basic questions. First of all, the discussion split into two directions, obviously, one being a technical direction on, basic who is principle, and the second one, which in my opinion is the most important, is actually what's being displayed into the output of the WHOIS services. And there are a lot of things. I mean, it's I'm actively involved in this discussion, and since we're facing the introduction of the IDN TLDs, the Babylon Tower, I don't know how to say in English, there is a sticky language now, the Latin script, which is the basement, the core of the internet addressing in the WHOIS and actively using in the WHOIS data, is going to be less and less visible, and more international characters will be used for the displaying, including the WHOIS data. It's fine. It's great. It means that we have a diversity, but we also have to keep in mind that we have to somehow keep the people on a certain standard level, at least to find a track of who owns the domain and, you know, this kind of basic things. And it's an active discussion. It is going on, and we know that it's in. In the fast track, the four applicants already had an approval for the IDN CCTLD, and the question of the WHOIS data and what to display is actually approaching us. It's you know, this question, there are a couple of questions which should be resolved really soon.
Can I just clarify, just so that we're absolutely clear? Are you talking about the data that is displayed in the IANA database, or are you talking about the data that is displayed by the registry in their own WHOIS?
And the registry and the administrator of the domain and the IANA.
It's all of them.
All of them. It's a set of questions.
So the IANA stuff is
the
obviously
IANA
relevant.
Stuff is a jig. It's actually the working group which we formed.
Yes.
For the CC NSO and GNSO to have a common ground of the display information, but I think as soon as it's a limited set of data, I don't think there'll be a problem with that. But as I said, Edmund and the most active guys in internationalization have moved into the move further. With this, with the issues of internationalization. Sorry.
But are you looking at what the existing? You mentioned the four countries that have already applied for IDN CCTLDs. One of them being Russia, I believe.
Yeah.
Are you looking at what the solutions that they have started to implement? I believe Russia's already in the launch process, so that work has got to have been done by them.
We do have WHOIS. It's already working in Cyrillic, but we've decided to keep the Latin script at least for a while until we have a universal solution agreed by everybody.
So your WHOIS is in?
It's in the
Cyrillic
Latin,
and ASCII. Latin.
Yeah,
and ASCII.
The only Cyrillic field we have, the new field in the WHOIS output called the IDN. So IDN is a real Cyrillic Unicode name, which goes out of WHOIS.
But the actual details of the registrant, that's all going to be in ASCII.
It's okay. All ASCII, yes.
Wow.
Is that something that you think should be a recommendation, that system be adopted for both IDN, CCs, and Gs?
It's not necessary. First of all, it should not be strictly regulated. It's number one, especially in the CCNSO world. Second, there are certain activities behind all this domain WHOIS output, especially the power enforcement agencies and the legal people. So at least some connection to the common script should be maintained in the old IDN world. At least some anchor services where, in case of trouble or in case of when somebody needs to find some information using the, let's call it, the universal script, which is ASCII, should be maintained. That's just my recommendation based on the common sense.
I think you'll find, you'll be agreed with by a lot of international law enforcement agencies who would probably find it quite difficult to look up domain name registration information in Arabic or Cyrillic. Anyone else on this particular point? Okay, I have one more thing I'd just like to ask if anyone wants, any on the GTLD side wants to talk about, which you all know that both the Governmental Advisory Committee and the CCNSO have for quite some considerable time now been talking about the use of geographic names, specifically country and territory names, as in the GTLD world. And the current position, as far as I can recall from our side of things, is that we have once again written to the board and asked if they could please actually respond to the letter we wrote them the last time, and so on. I was wondering if anybody would like to talk about what they think the current GNSO position is on country. I'm not talking about Berlin's and Sydney's. I'm talking about Australia's and France's and so on.
So we hadn't planned on discussing this, so I don't think during our discussions over the past few days, we agreed on any consensus position. We have discussed this in the past, and we did actually discuss this in our joint session with the GAC yesterday, where the GAC reaffirmed their opinion and belief that the current rules for protection of geographic names don't go far enough. I think once again, perhaps I may speak, give my own opinion rather than speak for the GNSO. My own opinion is that what has been included in the DAG, certainly at the top level, is a fairly comprehensive level of protection for geonames. Geonames can be considered the third category in the DAG, beyond the standard and community TLDs. They are clearly outlined as such. There's preference given for country, city, region names, and with different levels of preference. And we feel that, well, I feel, sorry, slip up, that level of protection goes far enough. There's also the question of the level of protection afforded geonames at the second level, which opens up a whole new can of worms. And I'm sure some of my colleagues would like to speak to that, so I don't get into any more trouble.
Can I just say I wasn't looking for a position. I was simply, it was just a topic for discussion. But one of the great things about these sort of lunches is that we can all kind of just talk.
My name is Jamie Wagner. I'm from the ISP constituency in GNSO. But I would like to just to add that I think the GAC concern is much more on the second level than on the first level. And I think at the TLD level, they are quite confident that the present rules are enough, but there is still work or assurance to do at the second level. And I would like to bring up a discussion. There are some, I think it's .info, that asked for two character at the second level. And this is not only the new GTLDs, old GTLDs also present some risk to this golden rule that I thought it was set.
Just to clarify that, the several existing GTLD operators or registry operators have requested to be able to sell, domain register, open up for registration, names at both two and one character in some cases. So obviously, I believe, Chris, maybe you know more about this than I do, but I believe when they have done so, they've worked with ICANN to ensure there's protection afforded all the existing country codes.
Yeah, that's correct. And the issue of geographic names at the second level is quite an interesting one, because, and I'm speaking personally, and this is an assumption on my part, based at least partly on personal experience, that the issue of geographic names at the second level is often characterized by the particular public service in a particular country as a work issue, because the last thing they want to have to do is provide whatever registry with a list of however many geographic names that need to be reserved. And whereas in my head, you know, you do it once, you've done it, you don't have to do it again, but apparently that doesn't work. So there's an issue of we don't want to have the hassle of doing all of this. It would be much easier if you simply couldn't have them in the first place. Our position is slightly different, I think. Our concern is very much at the top level, and it's because we think that part of the argument has been, well, look, if the government of Australia says, actually, we think we'd like .Australia,
and we're happy to have that as a GTLD. And it goes to Aus Registry and says, you be the registry, and does a deal, and Aus Registry applies and gets .Australia. Then one argument is, well, that should be fine, because the government of Australia has said that that's what they would like as a GTLD. But the challenges around that, I think would argue, are many. They include that governments change on a fairly regular basis, and this then becomes a political football. You end up in a circumstance where you might be getting redelegation requests simply because the government's changed. It is recognisable as a country name. There is also, of course, the issue that, and I'm not suggesting this would happen in Australia, but is the issue that the government of Australia might simply say, yes, we know we've signed a contract, but quite frankly, we don't care, and we're just going to tear it up. And what are you going to do? Take it away from us? So there are all sorts of challenges around that politically, which we think are quite dangerous. And therefore, until those things have been really thought through, and I mean really, really thought through, that there should probably be a reservation.
Just adding on that point, the CCNSO has a working group considering whether a policy development process needs to be undertaken for delegation and redelegation in the CC context. Many of the issues that we would be grappling with if a decision to go ahead and develop PDP with respect to country names would be relevant at the G level as well, if we're talking about country names.
Thanks. That's
and I can tell you it's not going to be a simple task.
But it's useful to know that, and it will certainly be very interesting for us to follow your work on that. I see that, Chuck, you have your hand raised.
Thank you, Stefan. I want to go back. Stefan was correct in saying that the GNSO hasn't recently discussed the geographic name issue, or for that matter, the two-character, single-character issue. But I want to go back to the GTLD PDP process, where we did discuss that, both of those issues extensively, and develop positions and also positions for geographic names at the top level. In fact, we had a reserve names working group that was a sub working group to the new GTLD process that spent a lot of time discussing these issues, and I'll cover each one of them in terms of the recommendations. First of all, let's go to the top level geographic names. The GNSO actually did not recommend reserving country names, but instead, as most of you know, recommended that we have a dispute process by which and governments would have been have standing to object if a name was applied for. Now, as everyone knows, staff implementation plan went beyond the GNSO recommendation and has recommended that those geographic names in certain defined categories not be allowed. And so we're all aware of that, and I'll just leave that at that point. With regard to second-level geographic names, there was not any recommendation from the GNSO that there be any geographic name reservations. And so the GNSO's position from the new GTLD process, and that was developed from the special reserve names working group, was not to reserve any geographic names at the second level. So what the GAC is now, and has been for some time, requesting for the GNSO position has been very different, and I'll so we're not in sync there, unless there would be a development in the GNSO to reverse that position. I don't think that's too likely, but that's just a historical update there. Since we also jumped into two-character and single-character names at the second level, again, the Reserve Names Working Group and ultimately the full council and its recommendations on new GTLDs did not certainly recommended that efforts be made by any registry operators to avoid conflicts with country code top-level domains. But other than that, did not restrict single and two-character names. And like Stefan pointed out, several registries have put forward registry services, and all of those to date, I think, have been approved by the board to offer single and two-character names at the second level. So I think I covered all of the things that have been brought up here. Again, these aren't recent discussions of the GNSO, like Stefan pointed out, but rather they were an extensive part of the discussions that were a part of the new GTLD process, and in particular the Reserve Names Working Group. Thanks.
Thanks very much, Chuck. Would anyone else like to say a word about this, or are we ready to bring this meeting to a close?
Okay, so thank you very much indeed, everybody. Thanks to those online. And see you all upstairs in about 10 minutes for the next one.
Thanks.